Welcome to Landlord Diaries, where we talk about midterm rentals and the opportunities behind them. We'll share landlord stories, talk about maximizing investment potential, and discuss how to live the very best landlord life. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Furnished Finder, the place for everything midterm rentals. Remember to like and subscribe if you enjoy our content.
We are back with another great episode of The Landlord Diaries. It's your host team, Kelly Bailey and Katie Lyon, coming to you from the Furnished Finder marketing team, as well as midterm rental hosts ourselves. Katie, I just was like eating up everything Tanisha said today. I was engaged the whole time. So guys, you should listen to this one all the way through. What were your big takeaways, Katie?
My big takeaways are for listeners to first get out a notebook or your notes app on your phone and get ready. Tanisha has larger properties. She is also experienced in the sub two and seller financing realm. She works with insurance claims. She works with families who are relocating. She works with corporate travelers. All the things that are really hot topics within this midterm rental space. So she just has so much great information, and she was a pleasure to speak with. And there's just so many good gems here, you guys. So please enjoy. And don't forget, if you're loving what we're doing, leave us a comment or some feedback, and we can't wait to read it.
Today we talk with Tanisha Epps Spencer in Richmond, Virginia. Tanisha has participated in Jesse Vasquez, Al Williams, and Pace Morby's coaching groups, and Tanisha is now coaching as well. She has 20 plus years of experience in the insurance industry and will enlighten us today on three main topics: five-bedroom midterm rentals, creative financing, and how insurance works from claim to placement. Tanisha, we're so excited to talk with you today. How are you doing?
Oh, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. I cannot complain.
Mr. Rogers, pulling it out. Love it. Okay, so let's start with your portfolio, because that kind of ties in all the other moving pieces. So tell us about your portfolio and how you got started in the midterm rental space.
Sure. So like most people, I got into real estate when my now husband gave me that great book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I did not actually read the first time that he gave it to me. I put it down, and a few years later, I picked it back up. And it was right before COVID. I read this book. It kind of changed my perspective on, you know, money, et cetera. Unfortunately, the lender I was going to work with stopped lending because of COVID. And so I had to get creative. So I read Long Distance Real Estate Investing by David Green of Bigger Pockets. And I literally just followed the instructions in the book. And I bought four houses in 7 months in a state that I still have never been to see these houses. I've never seen any of them.
What state is that?
Indiana.
Okay.
So I ended up using all of those as long-term rentals. And my husband and I kind of whiteboard session, et cetera. And we're like, okay, the long-term rentals are okay. But what do we do next? And so not only did I need to figure out kind of what I wanted to continue on, but also how I was going to pay for it. Because it's fine to use your own money for a while. But you know, my money's not infinite. I don't know about anybody else's. And so I started researching how to buy houses without your own money, which led me to Pace, which we could talk about, you know, with the creative finance piece. And that really changed my perspective on not only how I could buy properties, but what I could do with them. And so during one of these whiteboarding sessions with my husband, we talked about what I already had experience in. And I've been in the insurance industry. Actually, I hit 20 years last week. So I knew about corporate housing because I used to be a corporate traveler. So I worked on a catastrophe team for an insurance company dealing with weather claims, with homes, auto, people lost family members. Sometimes it was really, really tough. And so that part, I really cared about the service piece. And again, I was a corporate traveler, so I knew the experience of what it was like to have to live in hotels for extended periods of time, which is only great when you're on vacation for a really short period. After that, it is really old, really fast. And so I used to stay in corporate apartments, And I really liked the experience, but there were a lot of things that I wish I had that weren't being provided. And so during these whiteboard sessions, we go through and really talk about that experience. And that's how I worked my way toward wanting to do corporate housing.
Nice. Love it. Okay. You said something in there. I want to make sure we don't get too far past. You said you and your husband had a whiteboarding session. And I think a lot of our listeners probably have partners out there or even spouses that they do their business with. What does a successful whiteboarding session look like?
So the first thing with a successful whiteboard session is to not take anything personally when someone tells you something that you don't want to hear. So that's the first piece, like setting real upfront expectations about what you're going to talk about. And my husband is very strategic. Okay. He likes structure. I do too, but he's on another level from me. So he literally laid out what we were going to talk about, how we were going to talk about it. He wrote on the board because his handwriting is way better than mine. And so we just really talked about all the avenues of real estate that you could touch. And then we went through and just wiped out the ones I wanted to have nothing to do with. And that's how we narrowed down really our kind of top three. And the thing that I had the most experience in and the most passion about was the thing that I basically did on a regular basis when I used to travel, which was corporate rentals.
All right. So Tanisha, you have 5 or 6 midterm rentals, correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. And several of those are larger properties. And a question that we, Kelly and I in particular, get all the time is, do larger properties work on Furnished Finder? So I would love for you to speak to that. And then also tell us some of the things you might do with your property listing in particular on Furnished Finder to help them be successful.
Yeah, so a lot of people are focused on travel medical professionals, and that's the number one thing that you'll see on Furnished Finder. I think a lot of people miss that there's so many different client avatars that are looking for housing, and you have to understand who they are. And so I see a lot of requests in all the different areas where my property's listed. My one bedrooms are mostly travel medical professionals and people who are in transition from selling a house and waiting for their next house to be available. I get both of those on Furnished Finder. So it's not just travel medical. It's, hey, I just sold my house and I need a place to stay for, you know, a month or two until my house is built. I get a lot of military relocations coming to Furnished Finder. So
which area is that for the military?
In North Carolina and in my two areas that I have in Virginia.
Okay.
So, you know, when people are thinking about their client, you really have to know your area. I've seen a lot of the other guests that have been on the show, and they talk about really knowing your region and knowing your area. You have to, because if you're only focused on one client avatar, unless you're literally dead center between 3 or 4 hospitals, et cetera, then you're really doing yourself and your potential clients a disservice. So, I also get the insurance requests. Like I just actually got an insurance request 2 days ago from Furnished Finder. So, and that's on one of the larger houses because people have families, they have pets, and staying in a hotel is fine for a couple of days, but you can't take your animals with you every day, everywhere. You have multiple children, trying to stay in one hotel room is not a good idea. And now you have to worry about your kids, and the expense adds up so fast being in a hotel. So those larger homes with families, even if there's only 3 people, they'll still take a larger house because it gives them the space and the flexibility they need to still live their everyday lives as much as it was when they were in their own home.
You said you're seeing a lot more insurance claims you're seeing insurance claims come through Furnished Finder as well. I've been seeing in Austin more consistency with United Corporate Housing putting in housing requests as well. So guys, because the housing request feature is so unique and no other company does it, it's really a great tool for business professionals that are helping with relocations and insurance claims because it saves them a lot of time searching sites to find the right place. So Tanisha, let's talk about those larger bedrooms in a little bit more detail. You've got 2 5-bedrooms bedrooms, and you're not even all in one area. You're in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and right now, keep in mind, midterm rental pricing is more dynamic, so it can change throughout the year. Currently, Tanisha's pricing is $6,000 per month for that 5-bedroom in North Carolina. She's got a 5-bedroom in Avondale, Arizona for $8,500 per month. And then she has a 3-bedroom in Virginia Beach for $5,500 per month. So let's speak to those. How long have you had them? What does your vacancy rates look like? Has it been easy to find renters? To give a little bit more confidence to those that are nervous about the larger homes.
Yeah, so the biggest thing is you have to know who it is that's going to be looking for that type of property. What I typically do is I try to look at what the average home composition is in an area. So if there's a location that's really a high renter population, I don't necessarily go with those because I'm looking for homeowners. I'm looking for a high level of homeowner population because those are the people that are going to have insurance claims. And then I look at demographics for family composition. What's the average number of children that an area has? Is it, married couples? I really dig into demographics and try to research, the areas and the homes in the area. Is the average home a 4-bedroom or a 5-bedroom? Now, if I have a 5-bedroom house, I know that people can go up or they can come down. So if someone has a 6 or 7-bedroom house, which in Arizona, where my house is located, is not uncommon, they can make a 5-bedroom house work. If they have a 3-bedroom home, they can make a 5-bedroom house work. Like the family that's staying with us in the Arizona house right now, it's 2 adults and 2 children, and they have 2 dogs. We have a 5-bedroom house, and one of the rooms in the house has 2 beds in it. So technically, it can sleep, people in those rooms. I mean, it's a ton of people that
large number
spaces, right? They don't need all the space. But the fact is, there's not always larger homes because so many people are focused on smaller apartments or smaller places that when you have these larger homes, you become the person who can serve the needs because you have really thought about who is going to stay with you.
Tammy Barnes, I think it's episode 35. But anytime you want to find a specific episode, especially on YouTube or on audio platforms, you just put The Landlord Diaries and then type that person's name or type that episode number. And she says exactly the same thing. She said she wants places with high owner occupancy rates because there's less competition. You're not competing with short-term rental markets that switch to midterm rentals and off season. It's like there's not many homes available in those high owner occupancy areas, which, like you're saying, makes it a perfect fit when an insurance claim happens, right?
That's exactly right.
Katie, you want to add anything in here?
I don't think so, but I'm very interested in the fact that you've done all of these coaching programs because a lot of people are interested in them, but they don't come cheap. And there's a lot of not only financial investment, but also time and energy. So tell us about those and how they've been critical to your success and kind of how your ROI has come out of those. Because like I said, a lot of them, they're an investment on a lot of different levels. So I think people are always looking to hear from those students who have kind of gone through it from start to finish.
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Furnished Finder, the ultimate platform for hassle-free midterm rentals. Whether you're a seasoned landlord or just getting started, Furnished Finder is the place for you. With Furnished Finder, you can say goodbye to booking fees and hello to direct bookings for 30-day plus days. It's a win-win for everyone involved. So if you're ready to experience the joys of midterm renting and take a load off your landlord's shoulders, head over to furnishedfinder.com today. We make it easy to get started. We're grateful to Furnished Finder for sponsoring this episode, and we're sure you'll love what they have in store for you.
So I'll start with the program with PACE, Sub 2. So the thing about Sub 2, first thing is, I've been in that program since March of 2021. And I really don't care what their cost is. I would pay it again and again and again, based off of the value that I've received, the value I've been able to give into that group, and just the knowledge and the network. The network has been the biggest part. Now, I got lucky. I have a personal relationship with PACE, which not everybody has. But that's really been big for me. And just being in that group, like I'm a natural introvert. It may not seem like it, but I'm a natural introvert. I just hide it really well. And when I started realizing that was a superpower, that came from Pace because he just kept pushing me and pushing me and pushing me. I own houses that I never would have owned because of creative finance. So again, the house that I'm sitting in right now, this is a townhouse that I bought from a homeowner that was in a pre-foreclosure. And the seller literally wanted $2,000. And that's all he wanted because he was looking for me to solve a situation for him. And he's super grateful. Like I just saw one of the owners two days ago. And just listening to them and being so grateful that I was able to take over this property sub two. And now it's fully furnished. Again, we just got it listed. This house should rent for somewhere between $5,500 to $6,000 a month. And I'm in this house for $0 out of my own pocket. Like I literally have none of my own money invested in this house. I have private lenders. I learned all of those things through sub two, how to raise capital, how to network with people, you know, in a more intentional way and how to buy houses without my own money. Never, ever would I have been able to do that had I not joined sub two. So that is the greatest community that I have ever been a part of. And, again, Pace is, he's amazing. If anybody has not had the opportunity to be around him or his energy, the community, it's really awesome. So that was the first one. And so Pace and I had a conversation. I was at his house maybe, I don't know, a year or so ago. And we were having a conversation about network and community and proximity. And the thing that he talked about was you don't always join mentorships because you need the knowledge. You're joining because of the proximity and the community. And so when I joined Al's group and when I joined Jesse's group, I'm joining those groups for proximity and knowledge coming from people who are doing the same business that I'm doing. Not necessarily because I needed every piece of information that they had. It was more of how can I provide value to them and how can they provide value back? And it's really a value for value proposition. And there are things that I learned from Jesse. There are things that Jesse has learned from me. Same with Al. Like I'm still an active part of both of those groups. And they just give you a different perspective, right? Because nobody's perfect. Nobody knows everything. But if you just continue to connect with different people who are in the same space as you, that's how you learn. Like I'm connected with quite a few people that have been on your show. I've literally reached out to a ton of people because they've been on your show just to connect with them. So again, this is still, to me, your Landlord Diary show is a networking opportunity for me.
How have you found it most successful? Is it in the show notes? Do you reach out to them through their website, Furnish Finder listing, for those that want to connect with guests that have been on the show?
Mm-hmm. I look up everything. So if they have a website, I go look up the website. I see who else they're connected to. You guys had a guy on from Atlanta, and I looked up his company, and I just called a number that was on the company on the company page. And he talked to me. We probably talked for about an hour and a half. Just
oh, I love that.
Wow. Yeah, Vivian. Yep. Like I talk to Vivian on a regular basis. So and Pace actually connected me with her. Perfect. So again, this is how the networking piece works. It's one person connects you to another, connects you to another. You grow your business, you grow your brand, but you also provide value to each other.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing. All right. So let's talk about creative financing, because that's going to tie right with Pace's membership and mentorship. So tell us, for people who don't know what creative financing is, exactly what it is, and maybe give us an example or two of how it's really helped your business.
Sure. So creative finance is nothing more than figuring out how to buy properties without going to a bank. That's literally what it is. So you can do what's called seller finance, where it's a straight, let's say, Kelly, I come to you and you have a property and you're ready to sell it. And you agree that I can make you the payments. So you become my bank. I make the payment to you. You no longer own the property, but I own it. And now I control it and I can do whatever I want with it. I can turn it into a midterm rental and I just make my payment to you every month. So you can go on vacation and live your life and not have to worry about it anymore. So that would be seller financing. Subject two is where you're taking over the payments on somebody else's existing mortgage. In the cases that I do them, I actually own the property in deed and I'm making the payment on someone else's mortgage. Like, again, the property that I'm in right now, this is a subject to, and I just make the payment on behalf of the existing mortgage. I took over this one is a 5% interest rate. The last one I bought was a 3% interest rate. So I'm locking in the rates that are already existing on those loans, but I'm also solving a problem for the seller. And then you may run into a situation where it's what we call a hybrid, which is they still have a loan in place, but they have equity and they want to get that equity, but I don't want to pay them a ton of money all at one time because my goal is to get in for as low as possible so I can make as much cash flow. And then on that hybrid, I pay the primary mortgage and then I pay the seller whatever their balance is every month until it's paid off.
Perfect. Wow. You explain it really well. I see why you got in the coaching side as well.
No, thanks. Appreciate it.
So let's see. I think you've already kind of told us your most current creative financing. I kind of want to talk about like the price analysis, right? One, when you buy a property, you have your strategies in mind. You prefer midterm rentals. So how are you analyzing these properties to know that they're going to be a good fit for the midterm rental space and deciding on what you're going to price those properties at, since maybe your competition is much lower when you look on Furnished Finder? I don't know. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, a lot of times the competition is lower on Furnished Finder. But again, I know who my client avatars are, right? So once I identify where the property is located, I literally just make a list of every single type of person that might need to stay with me. And then I'm already working on my marketing strategy before I ever buy a property. So connecting with realtors, if I'm connecting with the local military base, if I haven't already, our military base here, I have a connection with the housing coordinator. So I already know what they're looking for because I talk to these people on a regular basis. So knowing your client avatar is really, really important. So like on my creative finance deals, I already know what the primary mortgage payment is, right? The payment isn't changing for the most part. So the next thing I have to look at is how much money do I have to bring to the table in order to get the deal closed? What are closing costs? Do I have to pay any money to the seller? Are they behind on a mortgage? Because I do purchase properties that are in pre-foreclosure. So I literally helped someone stop a foreclosure last Tuesday, and the foreclosure was at 1:00 and it was stopped at 11 o'clock in the morning, 2 hours before the auction.
So wow.
Yeah. So you have to know kind of what you're putting into it and then how much is it going to cost to furnish it? You have to know those things. I don't furnish properties anymore. I did my first one by myself. It was a horrible experience. I do not like shopping. So never again. But now I have a designer that I work with and she loves what she does. Again, she did this one. She did my last two. I am so grateful for her because I can pay her to do what she does best. And she'll come up with a furnishing budget. She creates the whole design. I don't have to do any of that. So I take all those things and I account for that in my what's called an entry fee, which is really how much does it cost me to enter this deal, right? And then how fast am I going to make my money back? And that may be over a year, over 2 years. Do I have a private lender involved? Because again, I buy properties at this point. It's not my own money. It's somebody else's money. I'm giving them the opportunity to put their money to work so they can beat the bank. That's what I call it, beating the bank, because the bank is not paying you very much. And I'm a very analytical person. So I will pull out a calculator with my private money lenders and I ask them, what's your interest rate at the bank? And we look at how much they're paying you every month. And then I compare it to how much I will be paying you. And then I literally keep them in the process of what I'm doing with the properties, with their money. You know, when the listings go live, I send them photos so they see their money at work, which is really
nice. Funny.
Because all they do is then want to give me more money, which is great. So it's really awesome. So once you figure all those things out, then you'll go to resources like Furnished Finder. So the stats page is still, it's a very valuable resource just to get an idea of what other people are pricing. And then I pick up the phone and I call those operators and ask them questions. How's it going in your area? What are you seeing as far as pricing? Are you consistently occupied? Who are the client avatars that you're seeing on a regular basis? This is the work that most people will not do.
Hey, landlords, are you ready to level up your rental game and simplify your life? Well, get ready to meet your new best friend, KeyCheck. PeaCheck is your all-in-one solution for stress-free property management with tenant-paid screenings, rent payment processing, online lease creation with eSign, and a suite of incredible landlord tools. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. No more chasing down checks or sifting through piles of applications. PeaCheck helps you organize and manage all things landlording in a simple and efficient way. So if you're tired of the rental chaos and crave seamless, efficient management, head over to keycheck.com and sign up today. Make landlord life a breeze with KeyCheck, the game changer for modern property owners.
Are you finding that people are supportive of those calls, or do you have to call a bunch of people to get someone on Furnished Finder willing to talk?
It depends. So you do still have those people that don't want to tell you anything because they think that you're taking business from them, right? I don't have a scarcity mindset. I used to. A lot of people start out that way. I do not have a scarcity mindset. It's total abundance because I'm not taking anything from you. And what I try to do is if you give me value, I'm trying to give you value back. So I will talk to people about different ways that they can potentially update their listing, or here's what I've been seeing. You know, I try to do that back and forth because I don't want to feel like I'm taking from you. And again, it's a networking opportunity. Like on my website, I have probably about, I think I have like 100 properties in my networking database where people can submit their properties to me based on my relationships for opportunities to have their properties booked. And so that's what I'm telling the opportunities on Furnished Finder, like, hey, I have this too. If I see this in my region, because I have a lot of direct booking opportunities, I get a lot of referrals from my past travel medical professionals that I've gotten from Furnished Finder. On Furnished Finder, I reach out to people even when my property is not available or I can't help them with my properties to see if I can help them with somebody else in my network. So, you know, it's really just a matter of understanding where your money's coming from, know how to price it. Like even for insurance, I know how the money works for insurance because I've worked in the insurance industry, but also I study. I do a lot of study.
Ooh, I'm excited to get to the insurance conversation. But right before we do, I had it for later. We're going to do it now. You mentioned you found the perfect designer for you, and now it's been a successful relationship for 2 to 3 rounds. But you also said on your YouTube channel that you've had some unsuccessful designers. So what are the do's and don'ts of finding the right designer for those that want one?
Yeah, I've definitely had not so great and great. So the first thing is you have to know what your goals are before you ever bring someone else in to try to interpret your goal, right? So for me, because I do midterm rentals, I'm not doing vacation stays. What happened to me in the beginning was I kept running into people who were familiar with staging regular real estate for sale. Okay. That is a totally different experience than highlighting a property for a midterm rental. This whole business is about providing a home away from home. So if you're in your own house, and this is what I told one of my designers recently, because she forgot to put dressers in the rooms. She did all these great design elements like bookshelves. And I'm like, who's reading these books?
They're using it for their clothes instead.
Yes, you have to stack your clothes on here because you didn't buy dressers. And so I said, hey, let me ask you a question. When you go home, where do you put your clothes? She said, I put them in the dresser. I said, okay, well, do you realize you forgot to put dressers in here? And part of it's my fault. So I take responsibility because I was getting married and I was planning my wedding. And so I'm like, oh, you got it. We've already had this conversation. I gave you a whole list. And then these things are missing. And so she's like, well, they have the closet. And what I said was, how often do you hang up your underwear on a hanger? And then she
never.
You never hang up your underwear on a hanger. So, I mean, maybe somebody does. I don't. But so those things are really important. You have to know who you're serving and what they need. I always encourage people, like even through my coaching and consulting, stand in your kitchen, open your drawers, open your cabinets, think about the things that you use every day and iron. Do you have a half ironing board, like the little mini one? Do you have a mini ironing board in your house? Probably not. I have a 5-bedroom house. You have to give people a full-size ironing board. And by the way, if you buy an ironing board, you need an iron. I've seen this happen where one was purchased, but the other one wasn't. So if you have carpet, give them a vacuum.
Mm-hmm. A vacuum is huge. I actually had a traveler once who asked me specifically, she was like, do you have a vacuum in your unit? Because the past few places that I visit, that I stayed at didn't have a vacuum. So I've been bringing my own. And I was like, oh my gosh, A, yes, I have a vacuum. And B, if you run into something like that where I'm missing something, please just reach out to me and I will have it sent to the house, because you don't need to be bringing your own pots and pans and vacuums. That defeats the entire purpose. But yeah, it's...
Vacuum tip. I like the ones that have the upholstery attachment so that when you have pets come, it can get most of the pet hairs with the upholstery attachment and label it so that people aren't using it for things other than upholstery as well.
Yes, that's such a good point. And the thing is, like, as we're furnishing these, even with cleaning supplies, I know some people who don't give basic cleaning supplies. You should encourage.
That's not the best interest of your home.
Thank you. That's it. You have to. So again, a vacuum, a broom, you're encouraging them to keep your place clean, but also it's convenient. I give people bag clips. Okay. It's like that small level. And one of my travel nurses said, oh my gosh, I never realized how valuable these bag clips were until I moved to close something and you already had it there. And I interview all my people too. I don't know if that's something that you ladies do, but anybody that's staying with me, I ask them, you know, a couple weeks into their stay, would they mind if I interview them about their past experiences and their experience with me on their travel, their housing, because I really care. I really do care.
Love that. All right. I think it's time to dive into insurance claims. We get a lot of people who are interested in hosting insurance claims. Don't really know where to start. It's a little bit of like a mysterious category here. So let's talk, because you have so much experience in the insurance industry, about how an insurance claim works from the time an incident happens into the placement.
Okay. So the first thing is, there's a lot of people who are highly focused on, I want to have insurance bookings, right? And insurance bookings are great, except you only get one if somebody has some disaster in their house. We're not wishing for that for people, but it happens. The thing is, it's not consistent depending on where you are. Like, of course, if you have a really high population, you're with homeowners, you're probably going to have a lot more claims. So the first thing that happens is something terrible happens in your house. Now, for example, my aunt and uncle had a toilet that just continued to run when they left the house, and it caused a water leak that proceeded to cause a hole in their ceiling, which caused water to fall down into their living room below. And so they had this gigantic hole in their ceiling, and it caused them to not be able to stay in their home. So that was the disaster that happened with them. I had a pipe burst in my house. The winter time is like number one in areas where it's cold for pipe bursts. You could have a tree fall on your roof and cause a big hole, and now your family can't stay there. You know, there's a million reasons why a claim could occur. It has to be something that causes your home to be uninhabitable. So just because you have a claim doesn't mean you can't stay there. My in-laws had a pipe burst, but it was in the kitchen. They ripped out the flooring and pulled out the sink, but they still stayed in the house. So not every scenario is going to require people to leave their home. So that's the first thing. So if they get to a position where they have the situation happen, they call their insurance company determines that they can't stay in their home, they open up what's called ALE coverage, which is additional living expense. It's the coverage D that's listed on your insurance policy. So if anybody owns a home, I highly encourage everyone to go look at your insurance policy on your declaration page and look at coverage D. That's the one that tells you how much coverage you have available in the event that you need to leave your home. A lot of people think that it's like a standard dollar amount, which it is not. The average is 20% on a homeowner policy, but that does not mean that people can't pay more or that they have less. Okay, so just because somebody has, let's say, a $1 million house does not mean that they did not get the appropriate coverage and they only have $15,000 worth of ALE coverage, which is a travesty if you have a $1 million house, but it is what it is. So you've gone through the first piece of filing the claim and your adjuster has determined that you cannot stay in your home because you need repairs to make it now back for you to be livable. So the first thing they're going to do typically is to move you to a hotel, especially if it's a really bad emergency. They're going to move you to a hotel until you can find other housing. Now, depending on the length of time that you need to stay out of your house, you may just stay in the hotel for a few days, have a quick repair, and be able to move back home. So just because you file an insurance claim and you open ALE, additional living expense coverage, does not mean that somebody needs your house. They may or may not. And so if they determine that the repairs are going to take longer than a short hotel stay, then what'll happen is these companies that work with the insurance company, by the way, side note, most people that are saying, I'm working with the insurance company, 99% of the time, no, you're not. You are not working with the insurance company. You're working with a hired third-party agency.
Yes.
That it is their job to go out and find housing. Again, I was an adjuster for many, many years. I'm licensed in almost every state across the country. I did not have time to do my job and then go find people housing. That is not my job. You let people go do what they do best. So those claims are referred over to these third-party agencies. It is now their job to work within their network to find housing that fits what the homeowners may need. And again, if you have, a family of five or six, it's harder to find houses for those people because they have a larger family. They're probably already in two or three hotel rooms, depending on the size of the family. And if they have animals, then not every hotel is pet friendly. And even if they are, they're not always breed friendly. So those are all things that you have to think about on this end for the property that you're providing. But if you're a match and you submit a proposal back to the carrier that asked you about your property, then they're going to send it back to the insurance adjuster. That does not mean that it's going to get approved based on the amount that you provided, because you don't always know what coverage they have available. And they're not always going to tell you. So you just have to make your best proposal and really hope that they don't have a whole lot of options. Because if they do, they have different ones to choose from. So then let's say that your property is perfect for the adjuster and they approve your rate and they approve your property. Well, now the homeowner is the next person that's involved. Okay. They're already out there searching for their own housing most of the time, on top of working with one of these third-party agencies, which they don't have to work with, by the way. They're not required. It's just easier. So they also then have to say, yes, I'm interested in this property. Now, I make all my people go and view the properties, because what I don't want to happen is you say, yes, I need a place to stay. I want your place. And then you get there and you hate it. And then we have a whole series of problems on the back end. Well, I ask everyone to go watch it. I give them, or go look at it. I give them 15 minutes to walk a property, because it does not take longer than that, to do a walkthrough. And then they can call me back, or they call back their adjuster, or they call back their carrier that's helping them find housing. They say, yes, I want it.
I have seen that increase as well in people requesting walkthroughs of properties. And in my experience, I've found the current tenants are very supportive. So if you're nervous about asking your current tenant if they're willing to do a showing, in most cases that I found, they are willing.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's because the same type of client is there already. So like we've run into that where we've had an insurance guest staying and the next people up needed to come and look at it. I just call them up and I say, hey, I've got a family just in the same type of situation as yours. They just want to come walk through. Do not worry about cleaning up. It is not a real estate showing. They just need to make sure that the space works for them. If you're okay with that, would you mind 15 minutes? I've never had anybody give any pushback on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if they approve it, then you go through the lease process, you set your move-in date, and then you're off to the races.
Love it. We've had a couple insurance stays, and tell me if you've had the same experience. In my experience, location and comfort are the two most important. And we had one family that the relocation service was like, they keep turning down all these properties. They like the looks of yours. They like the location. Can they come see it? And when I heard what properties they were turning down, I'm like, wow, those are much nicer than mine. But location and comfort and like something that they're used to seem to be important. What have you found for your insurance clients?
Yeah.
Makes them say yes to yours versus another place.
Yeah. It can be distance from work. It can be distance from a child's school. Like I've had people turn down a property literally because based on traffic, it was going to take them too long to get through their children's school. And so they decided to get something else. And the property, again, was not that far from their home, but the route that they had to take would have caused them to have to get up earlier, and they just didn't want to do it. So there's a million reasons why. And I had a request once for California, and they had already rejected, I think it was like 10 properties. I swear this lady just wanted to stay in the hotel. She was in a really nice hotel. And so her request was, I want a house on the beach that's 4 miles from this and 3 miles from this, facing the sun this direction. And there's no way we were going to be able to make her happy, because she already relegated in her mind that she wanted to stay in the hotel. And she did.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. So what happened?
Katie, what are your thoughts throughout this whole insurance conversation?
I think insurance is like, it's such a great opportunity. It's really an opportunity to give people who are going through such a hard time a nice, comfortable, safe place to stay. But I feel like it has to be a part of your midterm rental strategy. I think you don't put yourself in an advantageous position when you're saying, I only want to do insurance claims, because you have absolutely no control over that. Not that we have control about what type of other tenant demand there is, but let's say medical professionals, right? There's such a nursing shortage and such a medical tech shortage that demand is fairly consistent, right? Varying on your area, but relocations, there's always people moving around, but you just never know with insurance claims what's going to happen. It's kind of the unknown. So I think it's really great and smart to set yourself up for success there, to network with the right people, get your property in front of people who can use it to help people who have been displaced, but to have additional options and additional ways that your property can really serve others who are looking for that midterm rental. So I get weary when I see people in the communities of midterm rental saying, I just want to do insurance claims. And I'm like, you're going to have a really tough time, because it's almost like you're going to need to say, okay, I have a tenant moving out on December 1st. I'm going to need to call and have someone have their washing machine overflow and flood the entire house on, you know, November 25th. It's just not as controllable. So I think just everybody needs to keep that in mind, and then know that you've got to be active. I think another thing that people don't necessarily realize about Furnish Finder is, like, we're known for medical travelers, right? That's how we started. That's our grassroots, but that's less than 50% of our travelers now. They are still, you know, kind of our home base. There's so many things that we do to serve them, because we know that those professionals are traveling to really serve communities, right? They're the ones that are putting their hearts out there and are working so diligently to take care of all of us physically. But ALE Solutions, corporate housing people that are looking to place other corporate travelers, they're also looking on our site. Right. Sometimes they don't put in the housing request because they don't want to get bombarded. But they are using our site. And a lot of times people forget that. They think, well, if I want to do corporate housing, or if I want to do relocations, if I don't do insurance, I've got to go put my house or property on all of these other platforms. And you can totally do that. At Furnish Finder, we are not here to say we can be your one and only. That's not the way we work. We are not here from a monogamous relationship. You can have whatever you want, but they're looking on our site. They're here, right? So you're gonna hear from them if you've set yourself up for success there. So I just think those are key things that people have to remember. But everything you've said, Tanisha, it's spot on. And I think it's really helpful for everyone to understand that process.
I want to add in one more question on the insurance conversation for you, Tanisha. So how can Furnish Finder and midterm rental hosts be ready when they get that request from an insurance client, whether it's, the direct individual and family experiencing the disaster, or the relocation rep that's helping that family, what kind of questions should they be ready to ask the insurance company, and how should they be prepared when they get those inquiries?
Yeah, the first thing is be ready to respond quickly. Okay. That's the number one thing. So if you get one of those requests, don't sit back and wait 2, 3, 4, 5 hours to respond to them. Be one of the first, whether it's the family directly or whether it's the third-party agency that's reaching out to you, be ready to respond to them very quickly. So if, like, especially on Furnish Finder, if you don't have the app connected, you're doing yourself a disservice. Like, I get the text message and I get the email notifications. I have all of those things turned on so I can see them immediately. That's how I saw the one I got a couple of days ago for the family, by the way, that was on Furnish Finder saying that they had a flood in their house and they were looking for housing. So that's the first thing. The next is know what your amenities are. Like, know what it is that you actually have available and that you provide. Do you have a washer dryer? Do you have utilities included? Do you have your security deposits all ready to go? Make sure you already have those things written out so that you can share that information. If you're asking questions and you don't feel like you have all the information you need, I usually just message back and say, hey, thank you. First thing is, I always thank people for reaching out to me. Always. I always start with a thank you. Even with the travel medical professionals. And I love that you said this, Katie, about those people coming to our communities. I always thank them for their service. We always focus so much on the military, but we don't necessarily thank those traveling medical professionals who are coming to our region to serve our communities, because that's what they're doing. I always thank them for their service. So I'm asking them, do you have any pets? Because they don't always give you that information. How many pets do you have? Do you have children? Is it just adults? How long are you going to need to stay? Because they don't always tell you the length of the stay. They just may ask you, is your property available? But that doesn't really tell you anything. Well, yeah, it's available, but like 6 months from now. That doesn't tell me anything about today. Do they need to move in immediately or can they wait a week? So those are really important questions for you to ask, because it helps you to craft, number one, if you're available, and two, what you can provide to them. Because there are some people that they need to move in like today, and I've had that at my Virginia Beach house. I had someone that booked with me and they said, I need to move in like today. Well, luckily, because I have all my processes already outlined, it was very easy for me to submit that proposal and get it approved very quickly.
Awesome. Well, this has been a great conversation about the insurance process. I think it really will help clear up a lot of people's confusion in their mind. So let's wrap up with a few more questions about landlord logistics and Furnish Finder favorites. So we've already stated Tanisha has 5 bedrooms, 1 bedrooms, 3 bedrooms. She's in 3 different states. What do your systems look like, Tanisha, to get that 5-star experience every time, since you've got a lot of different avatars you're playing with?
I do. Yeah. So the number one thing is, once I do something like information wise, my information doesn't change, right? So I use Canva for a lot of things like my guest books and my guidebooks. It's all the same information. So all I have to do is, once I've created one, when I start a new property, I just swap out photos, I swap out base information, and I'm literally using the same product every single time. Like the
TV. And Canva is free, which is
nice. It's free. You can use the free version. I use the premium because I do a lot of stuff with it. I literally create links that I can send to realtors to send them about my property. I create flyers on there. So whatever I start with one, I just repeat it over and over for each property. So then I don't have to think that hard, because I have a lot of other stuff to do and I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel every single time that I do something. I record a lot of Loom videos. So now when I'm doing things, number one, I can go back and look what I did, but I'm about to start hiring people. So now I can pass those processes over to other people so they can see what I'm doing. Right now I use IGMS as my guest communication software, but I'm probably going to be switching over. But it's easy. I have templates that are preset, so I don't have to do every single thing. So when I have someone move in, I just let them know, hey, this is my guest messaging system, if it's a direct booking. And then they're going to get automatic messages. So once they move in, they get a message in 24 hours to say, hey, how did everything go? I had one go out the other day. I totally forgot about it. I'm looking in the message like, oh, this is great. So those automations allow me to go and do other things. And once you start with your first property, you just, it's really important, as I was saying, interview your people to see what they like and what they don't like and how you can improve your process. How was the move-in process? Was it easy? I use the same digital lock every time now. Super easy, so I know how it works. I use the same cleaner door lock every single time, so I know how it works. And then I know how to hire a team when I'm not there, because again, I have several properties that are out of state. So the same process I find to build a team in one place, the same as I do somewhere else. And I just buy consistent things like the TV I was saying, the Roku TV. I buy the same TV every single time. It has guest mode in it. I know I don't have to pay for internet. I only have to pay for internet. And I can go right to my phone and give a welcome message to the guests on every single one from my phone. So I know the processes I can do with each of the items that I buy consistently.
I love it. I think I just have two more questions. I believe you use the message template on Furnish Finder when you're communicating with guests on Furnish Finder. Do you typically use the phone number when it's available and the Furnish Finder messaging second? And how do you use those message templates successfully?
Mm-hmm. So I always use the communication method they started with me. So because they message me on Furnish Finder first, I always message them back. Now, nice. the way that I have the template set up is we have multiple hospitals here. And again, a lot of the requests I get for my one bedrooms, for example, are from travel medical professionals. So I have the template set up that literally says the same message, and it says which hospital it is that they're putting their request in from. And so all I do is take the template, go to the message, and then hit the button, and it sends them the message with the hospital listed there. I take that same template, I change the name of the hospital, I create the same message, and then I just save a new message template. So if somebody says to me, like, hey, for example, I'm coming to VCU, I go to the one that says VCU template, and then I just push the button, and it sends them the template. So I don't have to type it out every time. It's easy for me on my phone, and it sends them the exact same message every single time. If it's an insurance day, I have one for insurance day. And then it has the exact same message and it pushes it right to them. I'm not trying to work that hard.
I think what's also important with what you're saying is that, and this is something that I think I've been focusing a lot lately, is never starting from step one unless you have to. What do you do that you're repeating over and over and over? But you're not saying, okay, I'm going to sit down at my desk today and I'm going to make 15 templates in my Furnish Finder. You're saying, okay, once I do it, I'm just going to save it, right? So this doesn't mean that you have to say, oh my gosh, I have to go create all of these guestbook templates and all these messaging templates and all this. It's like, no. Just when you do it, save it and set your future self up for success. My sister always says, she's like, her name is Tara. She's like, I'm just always trying to make future Tara thank me. And I'm like, that's a great way. And she's so cute because she'll do something and she'll be like, oh, I just thank you, past Tara. And she like talks to her and it's hilarious, but it keeps it fun. And it just kind of keeps reminding you like, okay, yeah. Like, and even if you're in your personal, right? Like, yeah, I did put that item I buy for my household on auto subscribe. I'm like, thank you, past Tara. And it's just, it's this whole, and it's just, what do you keep doing? And how can you not keep doing it from step one, right? So I think that's very smart.
I'm going to have to give a plug in there. A lot of you know Katie's story, my story. If you haven't caught them, mine is episode, I think, 32. Katie's is 37. And we have our first foster placement, a 2- and 4-year-old boy. And what you're saying, Katie, is so funny. Like, I've realized how much the little almost three-year-old wants to say, it's my toy, it's my this. And I realize it's because we do that. Oh, this is my so-and-so. So I started saying, this is Kelly's water bottle. Tanisha, what were you going to add?
Yeah, just, with repetition and not working that hard, like even Amazon, right? I love Amazon. How many people are using the lists in Amazon? I literally have Amazon lists that are broken out by room. And the things that I like that are on repeat, they're just on the list. And you just hit the button, it goes to your cart, and it's the same things over and over. And I do those in multiple properties, which means I don't have to think that hard because number one, it's already in the list. And two, I know that they work because the guests like them. So anything that you can repeat to save yourself time and gain consistency is really the key.
Yep, for sure. Last question for me is, a lot we recommend, a lot of people, like, they get nervous, like, should I invest in the furniture? Should I not? And so Katie and I at conferences, in conversations, in Zoom meetings, we love to say, yes, if you're like, there's no reason not to go for it. Midterm rentals can work in a variety of markets. But if you are nervous, you can always add it with furniture coming soon. And you can make sure, one, that you are committed and want to actually move forward. Pick a date that you could have it furnished by. And you have done that as well, Tanisha. So how successful was it when you advertised your 5-bedroom Fayetteville property unfurnished with furniture coming soon? How did that work out for you?
Oh, I got requests already because, again, they're just looking. A lot of people are looking a little bit in the future. So they're like, well, can you just send me the photos once you get it done? Right. So the best one that I had was one of my 1-bedroom apartments. I literally had that house rented before I even signed the lease for the arbitrage. And that was a furnished finder booking. The person looked at one of my other properties. I had that one listed as a coming soon. I gave them an idea of what the property would be like. And she paid me before I ever even signed my arbitrage lease. So then we got it furnished and she moved in and she loved it, but she'd never seen the place because it didn't have, I mean, we didn't even have it yet, but I got that one from Furnish Finder. So most people, if you feel their need, especially if you have multiple properties on Furnish Finder, have them go look at your other ones, ask your people to leave a review. That's been a huge one for me, asking people to go leave a review, because if they're seeing somebody else's experience with you, it just gives them that comfort that even if it's not ready yet, they can look at your other properties and they can see your experience and they will rent with you. But I will tell you, some of my travelers have told me about really horrible places that they've stayed. So if you give them a whole set of silverware, you're probably doing better than some other people that they've dealt with in the past. If you give them more than one plate, if you give them a comfortable bed, like I've heard all the crazy, I know all the crazy stories. And so
I hope those are Airbnb hosts and not Furnish
Finder. I have not heard that that has come from Furnish Finder. I have heard that it came from somewhere else.
Yeah, just don't skimp, people.
That's it. Think about, like, how would you want to live? Treat people as you would want them to treat you. If you were in their position, doing their job or doing their travel, what items would you need and how would you want somebody to host you? If you can do those things and then showcase that on Furnish Finder, then you're going to be okay.
Woohoo! Well, this has been such a great conversation. I've been so engaged the whole time. If someone is loving your style, Tanisha, and wants to connect with you further, where all can they find you on social media and how would you like them to connect with you? And we'll put it in the show notes as well.
Awesome. So I do have a Facebook group. It's called Midterm Rental Mastery. So that's my Facebook group where we kind of talk about midterm rental strategies, people ask questions, et cetera. And then I do have my YouTube channel, which is Tanisha Epps, because I have not changed it from my my single name. So I'm on YouTube as Tanisha Epps. And then my IG is at the Tanisha Epps on Instagram. So I try to keep that simple. And that's probably where I post the most about just our updates, our clients, different things that are happening. And then my link to my bio in my bio has all of my ways to get in contact with me for consulting and everything else. And my ebook should be out by the time this is released. My ebook for my Midterm Rental Mastery series should be out. So
what's your ebook? You didn't tell me about that.
Yeah, I'm just working on the base strategies and then those client avatar level up and how to do furnishings and how to build the right proposal and really serve your clients. That's really what it's all about.
Okay, make sure you give us a link so we can put it in the show notes for anybody that wants your ebook.
I will.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Reminder, if you're loving our show, please don't forget to subscribe and comment and like. And if you'd like to leave us a 5-star review, we would appreciate it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We love reading those, and we just appreciate you guys being a part of our midterm rental journey as we are all in this together. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.